fragile. Very fragile.
There are really tons of phrases. Like, John is something that is said. It's a noun. It's a person, place, or thing. So this, for example, is a John. These papers are a John. This table is a John.
What
this place is a John. I mean, it means anything. It's a noun. So literally everything is a John.
Wow. A John?
A John, yeah.
Spell it.
J-W-N. John.
Okay, John.
A John.
All right. Yes. Very good. We're learning lots of stuff. Yeah.
So I would be able to say, that's a lovely John you're wearing.
You would.
Okay.
Bam, and you could also say of me, you could say, who's that John in the John?
Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined as always
by one very white guy.
And you are very white indeed. What's going on, dude?
Just glad to be podcasting on some sort of, you know, I don't want to jinx it, regular ass schedule.
We're trying
out
here
in these streets.
If this is your first time listening,
I'm sorry, let's get a clap for that.
Our trifling asses don't need no claps for just finally sitting down.
You said
to
it was. There's some debate as to whether that's sarcastic, but nevertheless, do your spiel.
If this is your first time joining us, welcome. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N, as Tessa Thompson just said. You can also go to our website, interracialjohn.com, and subscribe any of those ways. And we also love feedback. You can leave us a 5-star review, or actually, well, let me stop. That's a bit misleading.
You can leave us a 5-star review.
You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. If it is 5 stars, we'll read it here on the air. You can also email us, interracialjohn, again, J-A-W-N, @gmail.com. And you can also just pick up your phone, dial 657-JOHNERS, that's 657-JAWNERS. It's under 3 minutes and not ridiculous. We'll play it here on the air. Shout out to Rod and Karen from the Blackout Who Tips for our general feedback rules.
The Podfather and Podmother themselves.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Do we have some feedback?
We do have some feedback.
Wait a minute.
Now what the f*** are you saying to us?
We have 2 emails. The first one, a subject is welcome back.
Ah, thank you.
Hey, Leslie and Drew. I was so excited when the latest episode showed up on my podcast feed. Sorry for the Twitter trolling. It felt like forever since I heard the show and I missed y'all. But I understand Leslie's out here building this empire, schooling these white people and uplifting black women. I'm always here for that. Welcome to the Cord Cutters Club. I've been cord cutting for a few years. I use Roku and Apple TV. Will you let us know when the Safety Pin Box segment airs on The Daily Show? I haven't been watching the show lately since it was taken off Hulu, but I will make sure to check it out, the episode that has Leslie and Marissa. By the way, when is original John or Carl coming back on the show? I was just randomly wondering about him the other day. Talk to you later. Katisha, aerospace engineer and arch nemesis of outstanding WC.
I love
now.
They got a nemesis. I love
arch
that.
Nemesis. For 2 things. One is, yes, we will for sure let everyone know when The Daily Show is going to be hitting. It will be sometime in July. So sometime after July 10th, but before the 30th. But as soon as I have an actual air date, trust me, you'll know about
y'all
it.
Y'all will be the
everybody
first to
will
know.
Hear about
the
it.
Second to know.
For sure. Second, this is a really good reminder for us. And I'm sure Carl is listening right now. So, dude, let's get our schedules in sync and try and knock out one of these. Get the original, the OG, the OJ.
The original Johnner.
The original Johnner.
The OJ.
I heard this song on Jay-Z's new album called The OJ Story. So I'm interested. I'm saving my first listen of that to our trip to Jamaica. So I'm excited about that.
That's a good first listen.
Yeah, I got that title. So I'm going to download that and get it all together.
Well, thank you, Katisha.
Yeah, thanks, Katisha. Appreciate it. So our second.
Oh, and we'll let you know how the cord cutting goes.
Oh, we haven't quite got there yet. We're getting there.
We're actually waiting till The Daily Show airs to cut, to tell. I'm going to bring the whole box into Comcast and be like, eat a bag of dicks, fuckers.
A big bag of dicks,
you fuckers. I can't wait to tell Comcast to go away. Mm-hmm. But we bought a TiVo Romeo, which it might be over if you're listening to this. They had a summer meltdown sale for 48 hours. It was $299. So for $299, the TiVo Romeo lets you record 4 channels over the air. It only works with antenna. You can't buy this and use cable at all. It doesn't work. It has an antenna only. But the nice thing is there's no subscription. So it's literally for cord cutters. It's a one-time fee and you get the TiVo service lifetime forever. All the, like the TV guide stuff, all the thumbs up, all the stuff. When you search, it's connected to your Wi-Fi or Ethernet. So you can search Hulu, Netflix and over the air all at the same time. It's dope. It's like a better interface than Comcast. And for $299 one time, it'll pay for itself in 2 months. Mm-hmm. Literally, our cable bill is like outrageous. I think we can cut the cable, do HBO Go, Showtime Go, and Stars, and still save money.
Absolutely. So we have a second email. Subject: Ooh. Comment on episode 130. Hey, Leslie and Drew. I'm a somewhat new listener to your podcast, five or so episodes, and I normally don't leave feedback on podcasts until I've listened a bit longer, but I had sort of a visceral reaction to Leslie's views on Loving Day, and I thought I'd share my thoughts with you. This could go left very quickly, so I'm just gonna... I haven't read this.
I was just going to say, should I have pre-read this here? It's a long email.
All right, here. I'm going to keep reading. I'm going to keep reading. First of all, I also heard your comments on the Black Who Tips podcast. I was on that same day or like the next day after Loving Day, which is where I first heard you guys and decided to check you out. On our podcast, you said that being interracial is a 40,000th thing you would mention about your relationship with Drew. I know what you're getting at, so I don't mean to sound fatuous, but I thought it was odd that you could make that comment given the fact that your podcast is called the Interracial John Podcast. I agree that between two people in an interracial couple, race is one of the last things that has any effect on your daily life and your relationship with each other. But if in your relationship to the world around you, you're being interracial is significant. I think the biggest reason is significant is that there's people out there who get disowned for marrying someone of a different race, and that's only the worst case scenario. A lot of other cases, it will be quote unquote accepted in words, but you can tell that there's disapproval or discomfort under the surface. My fiance and I are interracial, and we get responses on the whole spectrum from dirty looks to indifference to awkward delight to genuine warm support. In other words, there's good days and bad days, and most days are neither. I still see racism and anti-blackness as a way bigger issue than disapproval of interracial love, which I see as a child of racism anyway. But it was still nice to feel validated in our love on a day commemorating the Supreme Court victory that ended the primarily anti-black rule against relationship like ours. Does that make sense? Despite all of this that came to mind, your perspective still gave me a more complex and conflicted view of Loving Day. And although I still have a net positive feelings about the day, I won't ever celebrate it in a loud or public manner. My fiance and I will probably just do the same thing we did this year, look at each other and say, oh, happy Loving Day, baby. I really don't see how much more is needed. Sorry for the long rant. Hope you make some sense of this. I'm looking forward to the next episode. Regards, Alex.
I don't mean to like jump in, but I hear all that, and you and I don't necessarily hold the exact same views on Loving Day.
Yeah.
And I get your general, like, I don't say disdain, but your negative emotional reaction to it is a little bit in the like celebratory nature that sometimes interracial relationships are upheld. So like the spectrum of responses.
Because here's the thing, and this is just being really honest and very real. Most of the shit you see with Loving Day is anti-black as fuck. And the celebration is about this notion that, being less black in a pairing or having one
by proximity to
whiteness is something to be celebrated. And low key, that's what you'll see most of this, especially, men in particular, black men. It's like this celebration of like, look, I didn't have to marry a black woman. Like that's the majority of the shit that I see.
The spectrum of responses, I'll just want to validate that, Alex. We see the same, you know, it's never perfect. There's good days, bad days. Even in family, there's like an overly warmth, like, oh my God, interracial relationships are going to save the world. You guys are doing it. Like there's sometimes some weird shit. But I'll say that on your end, the spectrum includes, an invalidation of your work because of your marriage to me, an invalidation of your voice and opinion because of your marriage to me. So it isn't just
But here's the thing though, like they would invalidate me for some other reason. Like it's easy pickings, and honestly they invalidate all sorts of people's... I mean, look, my vagina means that I will be invalidated. So I don't really see it as an additional burden. It just is a way people use to suppress my voice, not because of it. It's just a tool. I don't really see it as like, oh, therefore, it just is a thing that they could pick at me for.
It's another cudgel. I got
you. Honestly, like literally, if we weren't married and that wasn't something that people knew about, it would be like, oh, she's a first generation immigrant, so she shouldn't be talking about American shit. Like literally, which I've heard. Like this is people will use whatever they want to silence you. So I don't really see it as that much of a thing because of... That's just dumb and dumb people looking to silence, black women for the most part. The other part that I think I didn't even mention this, here or on the Black Who Tips, Mildred Loving did not identify as black. So people identified her as such, but she herself would be very the first person to say, I'm not black. I'm part Cherokee and part whatever, and I don't consider myself to be black. She said this on the stand during the trial.
Right.
So there's a lot of layers to this shit, but I think, you know, yeah, there's a lot of layers to it. And a lot of it is not stuff that should be celebrated, because in the case, and even in winning it, there was a lot of anti-blackness that was on display in the midst of it. And so for me, I don't see it as something to celebrate. Like, I don't at all.
And now, are these handles below it? That's not Alex and their partner.
No, you put this in here. I don't know what that is.
That must have been from another day.
Okay, well,
you can delete that.
I don't know. You left it in, so I left it in. All right,
so we got to catch up about a lot of shit.
Wasn't there a review? I thought I saw.
No, we didn't have a 5-star review.
Oh, okay. That's cool. No, I deleted that. Okay, you didn't delete it, actually. You left it in. Okay, I see now.
You ready to get caught up?
Yeah, we can get caught up now that you that I cleaned up all your shit. Yeah, let's go.
I don't think you hit refresh because it's not on my page. I deleted it. That's all right. So we went to the Unitarian Universalist Association's General Assembly.
I sort of went. You for real went.
Yeah. Well, we went. We were there in the city, but not at the same time, which correct. Is a new one for us.
Yeah, it's
to
a
be
new one.
Going to the same event at like polar opposites of it, which was strange. But Unruly Rev and I did a little bit more on the White Privilege podcast, which we're going to post today. So if you're really interested, like in the nitty gritty, like insider baseball, like white supremacy teaching and sort of this eighth principle we're talking about, a lot more about UUA, you can listen to the White Privilege podcast. But I don't know. What was your thoughts, Leslie?
You know, I wasn't there for the actual event itself. So, you know, it was, as usual, as with most things UU, a mixture of, you know, amazing displays of progress and, you know, coddling of fuckery. So, and I think that was on, you know, I think that's pretty common for most communities, quite frankly, not just UU. So I shouldn't single them out in that way, but I'll just talk from this perspective as a Unitarian Universalist. And so I was there to support the Black Lives UU team just to get them prepared for what they had planned, which was a pretty aggressive, pretty, you know,
ambitious,
yeah. Aggressive, ambitious program, which we had, you know, explicitly black only content in the healing space, plus running the healing space, plus worship services, plus we had a lot of things we were doing actually in front of the entire General Assembly itself, from the main stage, including a specific slot to talk about blue, talk about the work we've been doing, talk about this $5.3 million that we have been promised from the UUA. So that was really great to kind of do my comms thing and really talk through what that should look like and what we want to make sure is really clear to people about it, because it's been a lot of miscommunication,
right,
and erroneous information out there. And then, of course, there's just like the crazy, you know, anti-blue contingent of folks that are just weird to me. And I don't even know what to actually, I don't even want to talk about them. But anyways,
yeah.
So I was there for that. And the one thing I did get to do before we left is we did a pretty extensive interview that's going to be released in the next couple of weeks with the entire organizing collective together in one place, which we hadn't done before. And it was great. It was we were very like comfortable and relaxed and really just talked about our work, talked about what brought us together, what we think is important about our work, what's critical about this particular time in our movement as a faith. And I'm excited for people to kind of, you know, hear it from the horse's mouth. I think a lot of people have been out here, you know, talking for us or about us, and our name seems to be on a lot of people's mouths. But I'm excited for that interview to come out and for people to kind of get to know us, because we are just regular ass people, which I think is one of the weird things about GA and being a black UU, generally speaking, is anything you do is just very much
hyper visible
and also invisible, because they call us all by each other's names constantly. Kim Hampton wrote an entire blog post about just that. It was her first observation from GA, was that no, I'm not whoever she got mistaken for. Somebody told Lena when she got off stage that she looked like Michelle Obama. Like I honestly, white people just
I love Lena. I really do.
Stop.
And she'd be the first one like, Michelle Obama, come on.
Like she literally likes Michelle Obama. Literally. But people call me her and her me all the time.
Oh, shit, dude.
And literally, Lena has a good foot.
A foot.
Literally. Not quite a foot, but it's
she's like six. She's half a foot taller than you.
Literally.
Yeah. I'm not saying like you don't look at all alike, but
we
like,
don't look alike.
Maybe you're both.
We don't sound alike. We don't talk alike.
The only thing I could give you is like, you're both women and on the maybe like lighter complected. Like, right. That's about it.
I guess that's maybe, it, but still.
It's ridiculous.
It's a reach. It's beyond ridiculous. A reach. It's so ridiculous. That was my observation. Well, I think it went well in terms of that. Safety Pinbox was also there. And I think it was an interesting interacting with people that had a little bit more general, you know, knowledge about Safety Pinbox. So I don't know.
I've had a lot of good conversations. Yeah. And I would say back to the GA and just like if there was like a general like white anti-racist temperament, even a year ago, it was like I felt like Blue's work. So everything has been Blue's work up to this point. And we talk about that on the White Privilege podcast, that this was a culmination of a lot of different events and things that happened that got us to this point. And a lot of that was Blue's work. Kenny and the other religious educators and the white supremacists teaching. There's lots of just these little like zeitgeist moments that got us to this point. But for me, last year felt like that Blue and Black folk were literally like exposing wounds and pain and just sort of like, man, this is what we go through in your faith. This is what we go through. Look at this. And it was, I feel like a lot of people heard that, but the general, like, again, the temperature was like, I don't know. I guess there's something wrong. I'm not really sure. And a lot's happened in that year. A lot has happened in that year. And so now I felt like the general temperament was a lot more, yeah, the problem is white supremacy and I don't know what to do, but I'm ready. A little bit, not entirely, but like shit, half the sessions were racial, and just racial justice and equity.
Well, this focused. Was a justice GA.
Okay.
So well, to be specific about it, that they started doing these justice GAs after they were going to Phoenix. And it was when a lot of the immigration issues persisting to today were going on. And so there was a push to be like, we can't bring our money to
Arizona. And not have some action.
And so they turned that into a justice GA. And after that, they decided every X number of GAs would be a justice GA. So this year was a justice GA. So almost all of the programming was focused on justice. Pretty much.
And if it's going to be injustice and intersectional, it ought to have some racial lens. And, sure. And many did.
Yeah.
And sessions were packed. Like, I don't think, I hadn't thought Unruly and Rev and I session would be like all that. Like, I was excited to do it and I was nervous and they are awesome. Unruly Rev is amazing. I haven't even told you. And I tried to like tell them just how in their element they were doing that. And I was nervous. Like, I can tweet and I can be on a podcast, no problem. But up in front of folks, I was not comfortable. And they were like killing it. They had like, I don't say like punchlines because it's a workshop, but like they were really killing it. I sat down in awe on a few occasions, like, God, they're really, I mean, they're a minister.
Yes,
I hope that they'd be good at this thing, but they're really good at it.
Yeah.
Rev's really good at it.
Yeah.
So, but our session had like, it was packed.
It was the talk of GA. I heard people talking about it, like, you know, DM'd me.
You weren't even there.
I wasn't even there and people were telling me about it like from afar. Like,
for real,
my God, it was so good.
Double room and it was filled to capacity and overflowing and the ushers stopped letting people in. I couldn't believe it. I was literally blown away. So we'll probably build on it and maybe do some more and hopefully. But so me, I thought GA was a very different white temperature, just white anti-racist temperature. Mm. It felt really good. And there were voices and individuals that I think in the past had prominence that did not. And I think that was a good thing, like a net positive, if that makes any sense. And I just really thought it went really well as a GA. And the things that we as a faith community affirmed and passed, like the next step for the eighth principle, fantastic. The tabling of the change in language on the first principle, fantastic. The changing the language of our second source, fantastic, to be non-gender binary.
Yep.
Change it from man and woman to people.
Mm-hmm.
So really just great changes. And then Blue got a $1 million matching donation from a couple, like just one couple.
Yep.
And to me, that says so much. Like, and I said this on the White Privilege podcast, like, you know, why are you guys still fighting tooth and nail with these white people in this faith? Because if these white folk can't be moved progressively left and be, you know, stridently anti-racist, I don't know what white folk could.
Or at the minimum, just give up your goddamn resources.
Yeah.
So we can get this work done. Because I'm tired of having arguments about it. And they have nothing but resources. They're doing shit with them.
Yeah, fund it. You're right about that.
That's really, like, for me, it's always been about two things. One is that this is my faith. Like, let's be real clear about that. I fight in it because it's mine.
Agreed.
And so do most Black UUs. That's why we're still here, is because we see ourselves in our seven principles, and we've decided to take on this particular faith in a covenantal way. And so we don't have the option to just walk away, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is, that there are gains to be had. So we want to get them. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. I think, yeah. And then, you know, the three co-presidents gave Blue the President's Service Award,
deservedly,
which was really great. I wasn't there to receive, obviously, but the rest of the team was. Lena gave an amazing speech. It's been really, you know, to see from last GA to this GA was really, you know, great to see. And at the same time, you know, a bunch of Black youth came into the healing space and were like, oh my God, you know, well, all the white people are saying this is the most racist GA they've ever been to. And they're just, every time they walk by the Blue space, they just, their heart hurts because they can't go in there.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
So, you know, that shit still persists.
Yeah.
And we fight on. But I think, yeah, I think it's been interesting.
I'll give you the summation of last year and a bullet point to end on the service award for this year. So last year, Alandria said at one of her like big speeches at the end, you know, quit thanking me. Quit thanking me for speaking my truth and being here. I've been here. We deserve to be here, right? That was Orlando's sort of call. And this year, Lena, so that was last year's temperature, this year's temperature, quit thanking me for my work and join me, right? Mm-hmm. That was sort of the bullet point of Lena's speech. I love it. I love it. Quit thanking me and just join me, you know, fund me. So, on to the other piece you mentioned, blog her. And you and Marissa went to blog her, and you also got an award, Voice of Impact, for 2017. And did you record the pincast? Are you going to record it? I was confused about that.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Because that's too much this week.
Here. And I don't know if it's our show or our place to talk about blog her. I think it's probably better for you and Marissa's voices to do that.
So yeah, but nobody will hear. I mean, there's like, you know, articles out about it, so it's not anything that hasn't been talked about. I tweeted about it, so it's pretty public. But yeah, I mean, blog her was a bit of a disappointment in terms of the conference itself. It was very you know, centering whiteness and very like strangely, I don't know,
cis heteronormative,
yeah, all of those kinds of things. And so I just was kind of, you know, it wasn't as great as I had hoped. And also, you know, we were being honored along with a bunch of other people, but there was very little honoring in the honor. So that was weird. And of course, you know, Marissa and I thought it was important to mention a few things from the stage that they probably weren't too happy about, which was one that they don't have any Black women in leadership, both at the conference and also within She Knows Media, which runs the event itself, that bought Blog Her a few years ago, which, by the way, it's called She Knows Media. It's run by a French man, but, you know, whatever. So we made some demands from the stage, one about accessibility, because it was extremely expensive to go to. And I just really thought that they could have done a lot to either make it less or ensure that there are scholarships available. Because none of even the Voice of the Year people, like, we just got free attendee, like free registration. So we had to pay our way to get there. We had to pay for the hotel, all of our food, you know, all of those things. And I just think if you're honoring people, especially when a lot of them are Black people, they don't have resources like Marissa and I have. And so it was just really a chance for us to say what we say and do what we do. We bring the people that we are accountable to, namely Black women and femmes, into every room that we're in and feel moved to speak truth to power. So we wrote a middle section of our speech and kind of brought our phones out with us. The leadership was none too happy about it, but Janet Mock was the MC, and she was very happy with us. She gave us big hugs after we were done. And then on the stage, she said, you know, this is really important what Marissa and Leslie just said. We need to make sure we listen to them. And so I was really, that made me feel really good. And Janet was amazing and gave us signed copies of her book and took selfies with us and was so gracious and shockingly knew who the fuck I was. And I didn't even know what to say. I was just like, what?
Aww. That's terrific.
So that was really nice. And we did get to meet with some really dope Black women. But the thing that really pissed me off was after the Voice of the Year, Marissa and I took all the other Black honorees to dinner. We just were like, just come to dinner with us. It's on Safety Pin Box. Like, let's break bread together, since this shit wasn't providing us with a like attendee dinner or honoree dinner or anything like that. So we were in the restaurant, and that night was also scheduled a like Black Girl Magic meetup or something like a networking meetup. And we were like, cool, we'll eat dinner and then we can all roll over to there. So we eat dinner and I start looking, like I could see the lobby from the restaurant we were sitting in, and I look and like seeing all these black women start congregating. I'm like, oh, maybe they're just waiting until wherever the space is for the meetup is open. So I go out there and I come to find out that was the meetup.
The lobby?
Yes. Blockhard didn't give them a space. They didn't make the space.
Hold up. Was this was not something that women decided on their own. This was scheduled by Blockhard.
No. It wasn't scheduled by Blockhard. So women took it into their own hands to schedule something, and Blockhard couldn't even just give them a room.
Wow.
It was really gross. And just to like see them, and then like making matters worse, like on the ceiling of the whole lobby are these huge, like giant movie screen size pictures of white women swimming. And so I was sitting on this couch, just like looking at all of these black women scrounging space to commune with each other, with white people interspersed all through the space. Cause you know, it's just a fucking lobby. And above them are these white women like staring down. It was just really surreal and fucked up. But, yeah.
Swimming laps.
Yeah. It was really
while you're weird. like,
no, they like weren't
underwater.
Yeah. They weren't real women.
I understand.
Yeah. But yes, it was the visual.
I meant like swimming laps. Like, yeah. Yeah. You know, swimming overhead casually.
It was really
oblivious.
Weird and whatever. But
we're just going to be swimming. And on a high note, our niece, Ciara.
Yes. Oh, give a little ding, ding, ding.
She graduated high school. Yes. She's going to go to SUNY.
We don't need to say where she's going.
Okay, but she's going to go to one of the state schools, and yes, she's going to college.
She is.
And she just looked friggin' gorgeous.
She just is gorgeous.
All her friends looked fantastic.
It was beautiful.
There's one young woman that did the makeup for everybody, mm-hmm, and like she ought to be doing Hollywood makeup in 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone was like, golly, that's like really, yeah, like movie quality.
It was
makeup.
Really interesting because nary a white woman touched the stage that, yep, day.
I think they had one white person in the entire graduating class, and
she's not white. She's, yeah, Latinx, but and just has her hair dyed blonde. I don't.
Okay, so they didn't have any white, no, fully white presenting people in the entire graduating class.
Yeah,
which is terrific.
Which was, I wouldn't say terrific. I just think it's interesting. It's a performing arts school in Brooklyn.
It's terrific for our niece. Great environment.
Yeah, it was a good environment for her. But anyway, so that was really great to see and spend a little bit of time. We had a dinner, a little lunch, you know, at a taco place or a Mexican restaurant.
That was actually really good food.
It was great food. We had a great time, and it was really nice and to see them and all that.
Yeah.
So congratulations. And
a lot of the nephews came in, family, yep, from Atlanta. Yep. We got to see
great nieces
that, yep, we haven't seen in a while. Mm-hmm. It was nice. I wish we could have been there for more than a day.
Like, I was there for 17 hours.
Listen, y'all, my flight was supposed to be on Tuesday, and I guess I was on a connection, and it was delayed because of the Hurricane Cindy or the Tropic Storm Cindy. So they're like, oh, you're going to miss your connection. We can get you into Minneapolis at midnight, or we can fly you out the next day. I'm like, well, I guess I'll take the next day. So I didn't even get in until Wednesday, and we left Thursday. So I was barely there for 36 hours. You didn't get in until Wednesday night. It was
late
a mess.
Wednesday. My flight was late too. Well, the weather was definitely not cooperating with us. I didn't even mention that. It was
Tropical storm. Redonkulous.
Me and my assistant Paige, we went to get like food for somebody one night, and I mean, it was like watching a movie. Like we were looking outside and people were like walking by and the wind was like blowing them back. It looked like a wind machine. It was ridiculous.
It did a version of that for like 45 minutes every day in New Orleans.
It was really ridiculous.
You'd be sitting there and the skies would open up like, wow, that's more heavy rain than I've seen in a long time.
Yep.
It just would pour.
Yep.
But we had it was great to see all the family, and we're going to see them again on vacation.
Yes.
And that might have been the worst week of flights we ever had.
For me, definitely.
You had four one-way flights.
Yeah, it was really
from GR to with a connection. GR with a connection to New Orleans, yep. New Orleans to New York,
New York to Orlando, Orlando to GR
with a connection.
And we haven't even talked about Marissa's Uber ordeal and, you know.
And that's why I said maybe not even
kidnapping and all of that. I'll put a link in the show notes. I probably don't want to talk about it much more at general, just that, you know, I'll say this. It's been difficult as a business owner. You know, Marissa and I have had to have just the worst kinds of conversations about new travel protocols. We had to create, you know, we had Paige put together a form for all of us to fill out with like emergency contact information. And we're a small company, so it's stupid that we even have to do this stuff. But, you know, it just happened that I was able to reach Marissa's mom because I'm connected with her on Facebook. We didn't have anything in place because we've only been around 6 months and it wasn't something that was,
You were running a business. You weren't at that moment thinking about every possible iteration of fuckery.
Yep.
And now that it's happened, it sucks. It absolutely sucks that, yeah, you're writing a fucking like a protocol. And you, I don't want to say names, but you spoke with a few other high level, publicly visible black women, and they're like, yeah, I don't tell people what I do. When I get in random fucking Ubers, I'm like, yeah, I'm a teacher. I'm a fucking whatever. Anything other than what, you know, I'm an activist working on black liberation. And that is like, and I haven't had anywhere near that level, but like people ask and I talk, I'm not shy about describing what you do. And there's at least one professional that I see. I'm talking like doctor, dentists, you know, psychiatrist, therapist that is like in my life that I know is not with it at all. Fucking doesn't like it. When I mention, it's like I can see their eyes roll.
Right.
And it's like, fuck, why? Like, this is a, you know, like Jesus. That's just me barely like an impact. Y'all are fucking now having to write, like you said, like borderline kidnapping protocols. And that's depressing. And I can't imagine what that felt like for you all, the emotion. And I just, you know, like I said, I don't want to dwell on it, and I don't want to, you know, I think, even in the immediate aftermath, you were all upset and I was upset. I felt like I remember talking to people about it sometimes. And even in my relaying what happened, I felt like just objectively saying those things was uncomfortable for a white person. I shouldn't be as a white man, informing people of that. You know what I mean? Like it was so. Anyway, I'm glad that you were there to give her support, and that you're both ultimately safe and you've got support and resources to handle it. But fucking goddamn, you know?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, we're putting like specific, like now we don't, if I would have went to the airport early with her.
Yeah, sure.
We don't do separate rides. No solo trips. So just stuff like that that we're just trying to, you know, think. And one of our employees is black and Muslim and wears a hijab. And so I've been obsessed and very concerned about her safety, generally speaking. But now, you know, just making with NABRA and this and just, I just am, we can't even just go and just live our lives and do our jobs and be, you know, all the things they say, build your own, you know, contribute to the economy, become an employer. Cool. We did all of that shit and still in the process of doing those things are attacked. So I, you know, it just is sobering and upsetting
Let's just move it. Let's do it.
The news is coming on. Come on.
And this is probably in the same vein and just as fucking
Are you not playing it on here?
You don't want to?
No, I really
okay,
don't.
Let me shut it off.
I don't want to get
I don't even know how to describe it. The NRA black attack ad?
Yeah.
Like the NRA like
go open, shoot the Negroes? That one?
Open season on protesters? Yeah. Like, and they ended it with this clenched fist of truth. We're going to fight these resistors of their protesting our country. And then in the video, they're like, when the protest this and the cops get called and do what cops do naturally, then they get even more outraged. Like, it just was the most egregious pile of shit I've honestly ever seen come out of one of the most hateful, racist, horrible organizations ever. It's and like, horrible. That's saying a lot. Like, this is the worst fucking thing the NRA's ever fucking done.
And they only do shitty stuff.
It is just vile. And probably Leslie's right for not playing it on this podcast specifically. But fuck me, man. Like, you said right when it popped off, because they released it like 2 days ago, first thing in the morning, like 7 a.m. Eastern. You're like, oh my God, have you seen that NRA video? My first comment, no, but I bet it's real fucking left and you know, horrible. And I had no idea.
I literally said to him, basically it's go kill some black people. So there's that. And you're like, no, really? I'm like, no, seriously.
All right, you're right. Let's not even give the NRA anymore. Let's keep it moving.
Yes. Yeah, so I want to talk about this because it happened here in Grand Rapids.
Of course it did.
This woman was kicked out of a mall for wearing shorts and a tank top.
Do they have a picture of said shorts and
they
tank
do.
Top?
They do. You can click on the link. This was a week and a half ago. A woman in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
A woman of color, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. I'm going to go through that. Okay. Said she was recently kicked out of a shopping mall because another customer complained to mall security about her outfit. The outfit in question, shorts and a tank top. Hannah Peewee, who is a black woman, posted a photo of her outfit on Facebook after being kicked out of Grand Rapids Woodland Mall on Saturday. That's this mall.
That's our mall.
That's our mall.
That's like,
to be clear,
on 28th Street.
It's
the mall.
Like 2 miles from our house. In the photo, she's wearing what anyone might wear in a 90-degree day, a Finding Nemo tank top, jean shorts, and ballet flats, literally. Mm-hmm. So apparently somebody had decided she was too slutty for the public, and she was kicked out. An anonymous person reported her to mall security for inappropriate dress when she was kicked out of the mall.
Wow.
She says, I'm so angry right now. I'm shaking. I felt so embarrassed. I almost cried, all because a stranger didn't like how I was dressed. It's these fucking Christian
CRC,
fucks here.
Dutch Christian
I'm telling
Reformed
you, dude,
fucks.
They are such trash. Trash.
And they use their religion. They couch their religion in this like enabling of fuckery. You know, like the racism is emboldened by their religion. It's so horrible. And this young woman, like, honestly, and let's remind folks that maybe don't live in Southwest Michigan. It gets hot and it gets humid because we get all this like lake effect shit. Mm-hmm. The days in question, it was like 95 and humid as fuck.
Literally.
It was hot as fuck.
And
it
the woman, like, and she's dressed fine. Let's just really
she's
be
wearing
clear.
Cut off shorts and a tank top.
She's wearing shorts and a tank top.
A tank top with Dory that says, just keep swimming. How inappropriate do you think a Disney Dory fucking tank top can be? How inappropriate can a Dory tank top
be? It's not
even
like tight. It's like a loose fitting tank top, a pair of shorts,
fuck me,
and ballet flats.
It's so anti-black.
It's gross.
It's so anti-black.
And she also says, of course, never mind that there, within a foot radius, there were plenty of girls dressed like me. But she was the one that had to get
And you know how embarrassing, like she said, and for your dress and to be like paraded out. They fucking escorted her out of the mall.
Gross.
You know they did. Fucking I'm surprised they didn't throw cuffs on her.
This is why I got to get the
fuck
out of here.
Fuck this town, man. Fuck. That is just so ridiculous. I'm actually tweeting it because I just can't. Headline, fuck Grand Rapids. Because that's ridiculous. That's literally our fucking like bullshit ass mall. And that mall is a fucking piece of shit.
It is.
That like Sears just closed. Y'all, the Sears like anchor store is fucking vacant. And they're kicking her out of that mall? Fuck you, man. Seriously, fuck you. You need foot traffic in that mall. I'm like literally like, I don't want to say I'm like triggered and pissed, but that is fucking ridiculous. On to more fuckery. In DC, some teens were handcuffed for selling water without permits.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really nothing else to say about that.
No, there is. This is a follow-up story, actually.
Oh, there is.
So the teens were handcuffed. It was
for
only
selling water.
Yeah,
though.
For selling water. And it was only interesting to me because literally on my timeline, it was like, look, cop buys lemonade from boy. From white girl lemonade stand. And then the next thing I saw on my timeline was these black kids handcuffed for
three teenagers. That's under, you know, that's teenagers. Mm-hmm. Handcuffed
mm-hmm.
on a fucking park mall for selling water in a 100-degree day.
Mm-hmm.
Get the entire fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So what's the follow-up?
So the follow-up is that a lot of people are upset, including Councilman Charles Allen. He says, I'm an entrepreneur myself, and I love seeing young people have an interest in working for themselves. And he's teaching the two 17-year-olds about information technology. We hope to be bringing them on board as iPhone screen technicians here at the Hope Project. Gatwood is a senior at Dunbar High School, and White is entering his junior year. I would just like to thank the guy who took the picture, because without him, none of these opportunities would be possible. Bell started Hope Project in 2009 to combat the high unemployment rate in the community. He plans on reaching out to the other two young men featured in the photo. So they are getting jobs. They're going to start their new summer jobs at the Hope Project, which stands for helping other people excel.
And learning how to like code and develop
yep.
and like iPhone fucking
yep.
apps and shit.
Yeah. So.
And just, you know, like I still like, I, you know, the whole fucking, yes, all cops. I'll stop.
Yeah.
I'm going to get upset. It's,
yeah, don't
that's
get
just
upset.
Ridiculous. Teens handcuffed for selling water.
Really?
Selling fucking water, y'all.
Yeah, water.
On a 100-degree day.
Yeah.
And a black woman.
And again, it's one of those things where it's like, be an entrepreneur, blah, 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 blah. Okay, but you criminalize us for everything we do. It doesn't matter.
Leslie, I didn't even tell you. I was at the.
Do those Alex Lemonade stands have permits? Because I don't think so.
Back to the GR and
fuck
white people
all.
Here. I'm at the Duttlers on Madison Hall, which is sort of like, you know, in the little bit of the hood neighborhood. And, it's the only grocery store. So I'm shopping and doing my shit. And there's two, young boys selling or, raising money. And I don't even remember what it was, but you know, they always have like the printed out piece of paper that's like, you know, this is my school and official, like so that white people can feel comfortable and stuff. And I think, I don't even remember what they're selling, but I was like, can I give you a donation? I'm like, sure. So I gave him $10. Here you go. And as I'm walking out, I see him talking to a white couple, and she pulls the piece of paper out, puts her glasses on, starts like inspecting it and shit. And it's just like, I don't know why that pissed me off, but I'm just like,
yeah.
You know what? Like he has to have this piece of paper because like white people would never give two black kids run around fucking money for shit. They think like, oh, it's a scam. I'm not going to give you money. So you got to have the fucking little piece of paper saying I'm raising money to go to like Disney World or like, you know, play football or whatever it is. And they were like inspecting it. Like these literally like 8 year olds, fucking 8 year olds were running some kind of scam. That's what their assumptive was. And it's like, fucking A, man. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So this whole episode's all like anti-black racist horseshit. But yes. let it roll. Let it continue.
So TV roles for David Ortiz pulled amid controversy over racial jokes.
What is I don't have a button for like
the host shocking. Of Red Sox great David Ortiz, a Big Poppy. I love Keenan's impression of him. I find it so funny. On Monday, defended a controversial routine by, of course, Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski. But his shtick has had quite an impact. The taped roast didn't air last week because of cringeworthy racial jokes and vulgarities, the Boston Globe reported.
Of course. And fucking Gronkowski. And the fucking Patriots.
Addressing actor Anthony Mackie, who played, the Globe noted that this was in Boston and the audience was squirming in their seats. Addressing actor Anthony Mackie, who played Falcon in the Captain America and Avengers movies, Gronkowski said, "That's the black guy, you know, who can even fly when he's not being chased by cops. That's his superpower."
That's not even funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm not trying to like this or that, like hipster racism is still racism, but like, it's not even funny. Like if you're going to, it's not even funny.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it was Gronkowski.
Mm-hmm. You know, he also said, you want to know why Jews do play football, he asked, to get their quarterback, you cheap fuck.
Oh my God. I was literally like, don't finish this.
Then,
there's no way this
another
ends
comedian,
right.
Targeted Gronk with an eyebrow raising slut joke, but also directed some awkward stick at Mackie. Quote, "Anthony is here because we needed someone to be racist to, and Adam Jones had a game tonight."
Oh my God. This is Trump. This is so like, what the entire fuck? And again, that's not funny.
Yeah. Bill Burr and Lenny Clark touched on other touchy comic fodder, including Aaron Hernandez. Like, why would you? This dude just committed suicide and was a murderer. Like,
this is, golly, it doesn't surprise me at all. And this happened in Boston. Come on, man. Come on, Boston, get your entire shit together. Mm-hmm. Like the most racist fucking city in the world, literally. Practically was like, ooh, this is too racist for us. This is too racist for us. And again, like, I'm not trying to say had it been funny, but like, if the racist joke even had a chuckle, I don't know what it would be, but none of that was even remotely funny.
No, it wasn't even funny. And like, the thing is, like, David had to sit there and smile through this bullshit. Like, for real, fuck these people. They're trash.
Fuck that shit. Speaking of trash, our former home state, New Jersey, I think we have a couple of Jersey trash pieces in here, but Jersey police, Jersey passes a bill for children to learn how to interact with police. It's a bill to teach kids how to interact with police. Not teaching cops not to kill and fucking, you know, pull guns on kids, but teach the kids how to do it. Because that's the difference, right? When you act different, you don't get shot. It's got nothing to do with being black and unarmed and your hands up and in a car and saying you're reaching for a wall. It's got nothing to do with that. You acted inappropriately. New Jersey State Assembly has passed a bill on Thursday requiring school children to be taught mutual cooperation and respect when interacting with police as part of a social studies class. The instruction on compliance, I mean cooperation, would begin in kindergarten and continue all the way up until graduation.
Good Lord.
Fucking A. When the bill was initially introduced, critics reasonably took issue that the implication was that school children, and by extension citizens, were the only parties responsible for the way civil servant police engaged with the public. The bill was then amended to include educating the children in tandem on individuals' rights under the law in interacting with a law enforcement official, i.e. constitutional rights, which, if memory serves, used to be the main fucking point of social studies class, not police state compliance, but c'est la vie. This is from Blavity. Mm-hmm. This bill comes at a time when police interactions with brown civilians are at an all-time high, and some activists are skeptical of the bill's true intentions. New Jersey teacher and all-around awesome person that is the co-creator of the creator of the Noir Reads
box, yeah.
Zeliamani says, "The law doesn't empower young black and brown children. Instead, empowers law enforcement by allowing them to continue to evade accountability for abuse and misconduct while forcing the burden on the public." Yeah, and I'm going to click on this bill. I'm going to need the whole article, but what the entire fuck, dude? two pages. Let's see what I'm going to read the actual. Concerning the core curriculum content standards and supplemental chapter 35 of Title 18 New Jersey statutes. This is some real fuckery. This bill, this is the whole, it's two pages. Beginning in 2015-2016 school year, each school district shall incorporate instruction on interacting with law enforcement official in a manner marked by mutual cooperation and respect as part of the district's implementation of the core curriculum, content standards, and social studies. So it's Common Core now. The instruction shall be included in an appropriate place in the curriculum of elementary school, middle school, high school students. The instruction shall provide students with information on the role and responsibilities of a law enforcement official in providing the public safety and an individual's responsibility to comply with a directive from a law enforcement official.
And look, it passed 70-0. 76-0.
This act shall take effect immediately. This bill requires school districts to provide instruction on interacting with law enforcement in a manner. I mean, I just like literally, good Lord. Responsibility to comply with a directive from a law enforcement official. That's the bill. That you have to teach kids how to comply in Common Core. And it passed unanimously. For shit's sake. You want to skip around one? Cause I can go to the next one. That Chris Christie is the most unpopular governor in 20 years.
He trashed
across all states.
Yes.
And like that, I didn't need a poll. That could have been Ask Mom, right?
Cause so
like,
why did we skip over the next one?
Because it was New Jersey. It was all Jersey. It just piled the New Jersey stuff.
Jersey shit together.
Like we lived in Jersey and like, he was shit there, and I can't believe he kept getting reelected. The whole bridge thing should have been the end of it. Like, if people don't know nationally, he got, like, lambasted for a community in New Jersey that shares a bridge over to New York, not doing something he wanted politically. I think, like, the mayor or somebody didn't endorse him, literally, like, something petty as fuck. And Christie had, like, the bridge authority shut down the New Jersey side for, like, 2 fucking weeks. And, like, they've got, like, texts and emails and memos that are like, yeah, close it. Get them fuckers. Like, literally. And he's still in office. No big deal. NBD. He might have got reelected after that. My favorite Christie is when he had to fucking eat a bag of shit and bow down to Trump. And afterwards, as he's leaving, Trump whispers in your ear, go get in your little plane and go home. Like, you literally had to get on the tarmac and kiss the fucking ring of this fucking orange fucking like menace. And he then tells you, go get in your little plane and go home.
He deserved that shit.
He got caught on audio.
So this is out of Chicago. Meet the neighborhood medics trained to save Chicago shooting victims before ambulance arrive. A NAVA program turns bystanders into first responders. A few weeks after she turned 15, Journey Jameson saved a man's life. It was a hot Sunday afternoon last July. Journey said she was lying on her couch in Chicago's Brownville neighborhood when a stranger burst through her back door bleeding from his neck. I've been shot. Can you help me? Jones had recently been trained for this kind of situation, and she immediately said yes. This is a story about that, yes, a story about a program that teaches Chicago residents to care for shooting victims, control a chaotic scene, and talk to cops and paramedics about how one group is enabling families to take more control over their surroundings in a city plagued by gun violence, and how learning how to help your neighbors can change your view of the city that you live in. It's pretty dope. And actually WBEZ is doing like a months-long look at gun violence in Chicago, and more specifically the stories they're telling about people's responses to it, what they have come up with to combat the effects of it. And so this is just one of them. Ujima Medics, or U Medics. Ujima means collective work and responsibility in Swahili. And so it's pretty,
I swear, is this an outgrowth of a group we saw at Allied Media Conference 2 summers ago? And they talked about, first they were training people on almost like how to not let the police narrative and like false information and evidence go, like almost like,
I don't think this is an outshoot of anything. It's a thing itself. It's not an outshoot of anything.
I think it's interesting that there's different groups. Well, I think that there
have to be, you know, community will always try to fix itself because they know what is needed. And so it came about because in 2013, the city inspector generals released a report on how often paramedics took more than 5 minutes to get to a medical emergency. And the result, longer response times were more common in some parts of the South Side. And so UMedics was co-founded by Martine Carvel. And so she put it together and they started leading trainings in 2014. We wanted to say to people, this is one thing we can do.
Yeah.
You know, when we hear gunshots, we are going to make sure we are safe, but then we are likely to see what's going on because we have something we can offer. And so it's pretty dope. You know, street medics definitely became a big thing just to have at protests and at demonstrations and things. And so to see this being so specifically focused on a specific community and a specific specific injury, I should say, because I think they're able to focus on gun specific injuries.
When you handle all the fucking fuckery that people use about Chicago and gun violence as a response, like, oh, you can't do anything about black liberation if you don't work on crime in Chicago, or even worse, like black on black crime in Chicago, like really, because the community's doing shit. And I know there's a product that the military has where it's like, it looks like a big fat syringe, but it's not an actual syringe. It's got like a bigger opening and you inject it into gunshot wounds and it's got these little like, bio pellets that expand and close a wound up. And it's not meant to like be a permanent, but rather like a stanch of the bleeding until you can get an individual a more immediate control and care. I hope that this group gets shit like that, that people are, you know, supporting it, that there's funding in some way. Make sure we put a link up on our site, because that's dope as shit.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
And you say all the time, I've seen enough of your trainings and workshops and conversations where people will ask you like, well, what do you do when you go into a community? And you're like, I don't do anything. The community knows what they need, mm-hmm. and they're already working on it. I just lift up and support those people doing that work.
Yeah.
And here it is. This community knows what they need, and they're doing work about it.
I'm skipping this last story here.
Yeah, I don't want to end on that. That was a horrible...
Yeah, I didn't.
That's not a good note to end on.
No, it sure isn't. So
let's get the
white people. I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I 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 wait
till I wait till I wait till
I wait till I wait till
I wait till I wait till
I wait till I wait till I wait till I wait till I wait till I wait till I wait
till I wait till I wait
till I wait till I
white people.
Take two.
I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. How come your hay is always off?
White people.
God damn it. Fucking white people.
Exactly. Fucking white people. Your hays are even off.
On the ones, of course.
Three more Lakewood houses raided in multi-million-dollar welfare fraud investigation. This is also in New Jersey, in Lakewood, New Jersey. Authorities arrested three more Lakewood couples, white couples, Tuesday night in a continued effort to crack down on residents suspected of defrauding government assistance programs. Officials announced Wednesday morning. The raids conducted just before midnight comes on the heels of a massive bust on Monday that led to the arrest of eight Lakewood residents, four married couples who allegedly bilked the government out of $1.3 million in illegal benefits.
White welfare queens. White. Let's just, white. Not even queens. White welfare, white. What's the right word?
Fraud.
Fraud. White, yeah. Welfare fraud. You know, and people always, all the fucking time, we're real convenient to forget that the most demographic representation of welfare is white people. Of people on welfare, the majority are white. Because the majority of the country is white. And so, of course, the majority of people frauding it would be white. That serves to be logical. That's not the narrative, though.
Mm-hmm.
$1 million, too. God damn. Mm-hmm. Always the fucking white people. Was there more to that? I just did.
No, that's it. I just was mentioning it because I just think it's funny. People are always like talking about. One of them is a former rabbi of a special needs school that closed in 2015 due to a $300,000 tax lien. These people are literally criminals, but yeah. Whatevs.
So I guess I haven't read this whole article. Maybe you've read something that would put this under fucking white people, but
it's just about white people. I don't think it was like fucking white people.
All right. I was just making sure there wasn't something I was missing about this.
I don't know anything about it. So
Redneck Revolt is a group that's recruiting and predominantly it's an anti-racist group. So mm-hmm. The infancy of the Trump presidency, a new community defense network, is espousing anti-racist and anti-capitalist politics to build coalitions in cities, small towns, and rural areas across America. Redneck Revolt recruits predominantly poor and working class white people away from reactionary politics. The organization advances an analysis of their class condition and white supremacy's role in upholding the wealth and privilege of a small white elite. Redneck Revolt inserts themselves into overwhelmingly white spaces, NASCAR races, gun shows, flea markets in rural communities, and country music concerts to offer a meaningful alternative to the white supremacist groups who often also recruit in these spaces. So I think it's good. I think it's great that there's an alternative. You know, I'm not sure. I haven't heard their entire message. Sometimes when it's couched in anti-capitalist, like elite oligarchs, the racial component can be overlooked, but it sounds like they're, at least acknowledging white supremacy's role in upholding those, kind of systems. But I thought it was interesting. I hadn't heard anybody going into the belly of the beast mm-hmm. and offering an alternative. And I, on the whiteprivilege.info website, I have groups, specifically that work with white folk. And then there's another page, for groups that like work to have folks exit hate groups. And I'd put this in that same sort of genre, mm-hmm. right? And they're using, you know, they've got all the language, economic anxiety, you know, they know the way to talk to those, you know, what's the hillbilly Eulogy or Elegy, that popular book, them folks feel like they're left out.
Yeah, so here, this is an open, this is a little letter they have in their little zine. It says, this is an open call to all pissed off white working people. This is an open call to ignore the rhetoric of the alt-right, to ignore the false allegiances that the rich whites try to get us to buy into, to ignore the illogical and ridiculous race baiting from the ignorant among us. This is a call to reject the idea of whiteness, that it is to reject the idea that our allegiance is somehow determined by what skin we have, even when our real living situations are so different. This is an open call to no longer ignore the fact that our real allies are not determined by skin color, but by our social conditions. Our real enemies are mostly white, English-speaking Christians. Our allies are folks of all colors who are forced to work for a living to provide for their families and to keep a roof over their heads. Until we start to recognize ourselves and our neighbors, we are doomed to repeat everything that's happened for the last centuries. We'll still be here trying to climb out of the hole we find ourselves in, and our children will inherit the same destiny, and our grandchildren after them, and so on, until finally a generation of white working people will realize that we've been tricked and used primarily by people of our own race. We will be stuck in someone else's fantasy until we recognize that the glorious white nation promised by the alt-right is only about power for them and the same hard lives for us. It's to meet other working people who are working together to seek liberty and a life worth living. You can reach us at, and has our contact information.
I saw something where they raised some money to arm a BLM chapter in Lawrence, Fort Worth, Kansas. I'm a redneck rule. I'm here for that. Giving money to black
folks.
Yeah,
but it's a lot of these like, oh, the Dems and the Republicans are the same. Like, it's a lot of that.
Yeah, and that's why there was a, and I can't remember the guy's name, but there was a video that got widely shared, millions of views. And it was a white dude speaking in front of a green screen with lots of, you know, graphic images and like intense music and shit. But it was basically the same sort of mantra that's like, listen, white folk, the wool has been pulled over your eyes. It's a elite 1% oligarchy that's pulling all the strings, and they're pitting us against each other and using race to do it. And to some degree, it's not like inaccurate, but I think it's a convenient jump to the end without any sort of acknowledgement or accountability. It's like it allows white folk to have somebody else to blame without saying like, wait a minute, how do we fit into the system? Where's our blame? Where's our responsibility for upholding and maintaining these systems for so long? And I think it's a convenient out for a lot of white folk to just right. go. It's almost like the love will win is like similarly devoid of any sort of accountability in the steps. Like, you get all the way to the like level win and like, I just want to love everybody. Like, okay, that's great, but we have a problem and love isn't going to solve it. And in the same sense, like blaming the oligarchy 1%, it's like, okay, I get it. And maybe that's an easier way to get to the end result, but like, that doesn't change the realities of where we're living today.
Right.
You know, and like, so there's even like, is it education for education's sake? And then like, when the education skips over some vital components, is it even really worthwhile?
Right. Also, I think it's one of those things. We had this conversation a number of years ago, I think even on the show, where we were talking about like, if there was like a financial reason to get white people to support, you know,
justice
pro a justice bill or something in the legislature or something, would that be an appropriate approach, right, to passing
right.
it? And my comment to you was, sure, to passing it is, but to lasting change it's not right
all.
Because we haven't rooted out the problem. And a lot of their rhetoric, even that letter I just read, is around this, like, well, you won't get the white nation that you strive for. Not that you shouldn't be striving for the white
right.
nation.
That's what I mean
right?
by that's what
and
I mean
that's
by the
where the problem
steps.
Comes
yeah
in.
Yeah,
that's where the issue
it's,
is.
It's literally like, oh, you've been swindled and fooled, but not you're a fool for participating
correct,
in this.
Correct, correct.
It's very different. Correct. It's very different.
So that's where I would draw. That's why I say fucking white people.
And so I had that same kind of like, you know, I felt the same pull in terms of that kind of language. So we did have something to call mom about. Let me just see here. Do, do, do. I think it's your turn to talk to mom.
Oh, hey, mom. How's it going?
Wait.
Oh, she didn't pick up yet.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, hey, mom. I just wanted to talk to you because I just saw this new report that came out that said Facebook's secret censorship rules protect white men from hate speech, but not black children.
Okay, they're racist.
See?
That's it.
They are.
That's just it.
Yes. Yeah, so You can go ahead and talk about this. Or am I supposed to talk
no,
about
it? No, I just, in that ProPublica article.
I think I am. A ProPublica article, yes. It's, that came out. It's an investigation, actually, not just an article.
No, and I think that was a really, I want to lift up that they did a good job of getting more of the details as to how this secret algorithm and their like censorship core of folks work. And there was a slide in particular. And there was the concept that I'm not sure I even fully understand. And I think it's some like white nonsense the way that they're doing it. But in Facebook's mind, algorithmically, a protected class is the top level of a generality. So white men is a protected class. White people is a protected class. But now, if you add in any sub segmentation, any other social or other demographic variable, you are now not talking about a protected class. You're talking about a subset of said protected class. So, example, female drivers are not protected. If I said female drivers can all go to fucking hell, they suck and I wish they'd fucking die, not a problem at all. Totally not a protected class because of the driver piece. Drivers, once you add any non-protected group sub-segmentation, the whole thing is now no longer protected. Now, they had a slide to illustrate these points, and they were trying to get you to like answer the questions like it's a quiz, like, oh, pick A, B, or C. The slide is, which of these groups is a protected class under Facebook's rules, which we've just now paraphrased for you, and you can read more at ProPublica. White men, answer A. B, I think it was the female drivers. C, black children. Answer A was the right answer. White men.
White men. Yeah.
And I don't understand how men doesn't invalidate white as a subsegment, but somehow it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But it's children also telling invalidates
that,
black.
But the thing about that slide was interesting to me because there are other protected classes they could have used there, but they specifically white used men. White men.
Yeah, they could have done a bunch.
They specifically used white men. And so to me, it's like, it's an indicator. I'm quoted in the piece. I was interviewed for it. As most of you know, I was banned on Facebook for some bullshit. Dee Dee's in here as well. Yeah, and they've been working on it for a while. Some of it's from other countries, the data that they've put together. But long story short, Facebook is trash and it's racist as fuck. So. Bad boys, what you want, what you want, what you gonna do when Shelly John Brown come for you? Hey, hey, tell me what you gonna do.
I don't have to, I can't fade my music anymore. I gave those controls to you. But so we're running close on our time. You want to do both of these or one of these?
No, we'll do one. Which one do you want to do? The options are Florida cop makes up law to ticket black man while walking without identification, or off-duty Illinois cop detained black teen for not following orders. Lansing police say.
Let's do the, if you play it, do the first one.
Okay. Let's see what they say.
Do the Florida cop gives it? The lead is makes up a law to ticket a black man for walking without identification.
Yeah, literally
makes up a law. Fucking cops.
According to the Miami Herald, a police officer in Jacksonville, Florida, incorrectly cited a law requiring identification for drivers when giving a ticket to a black man for jaywalking and for not having ID on him. As shown in a viral video, the man in question posted on social media the video. Posted by 21-year-old whoever, shows Jacksonville Sheriff Office Officer J.S. Bolin confronting Shipman for jaywalking. When Shipman asked the officer what he'd done wrong, the cop told him he was fining him for jaywalking, which cost $65. Bolin then asked the young man for his ID, and when he told the officer he didn't have it, Bolton snapped. That's another infraction. In the state of Florida, you have to have an ID card on you identifying who you are, or I can detain you for 7 hours until I figure out who you are.
Jesus.
According to the Herald, however, the officer got the law wrong. Florida statute 322.15 requires licensed drivers to always have their licenses when driving and can incur $136 fine if they do not, but no such law exists for walking without a license. Bolin also gave Shipman a citation for failing to obey a pedestrian control signal, another $62.50 fine.
And you know the thing that I always, whenever I see and hear about this stuff,
here it is.
You crossed. Take your camera and point it across there at the red hand. Mm-hmm. That is a crosswalk. One, you weren't in the crosswalk. Two, there was a red sign. You both crossed.
Oh, my bad.
That's a $65 ticket if you skip my car. You are being legally detained. If you don't, you are disobeying. I'm going to put you in jail.
No, that's against the law right there. You got to see, look.
You look at me. If you don't walk to that car, I'm going to you in jail.
I'm crossing the street, officer. That's
can I just get a warning so you know I'm just going
to get to my car. You're going to walk to my car. I'm about to put you in jail.
For what?
Disobeying a direct order.
That's not disobeying a
resisting
direct order.
Resisting without.
That's not walk resisting. To my car. That is not resisting, officer. That is not resisting,
listen
officer.
To me. I am doing you a favor. I'm not telling you again.
Doing him a favor.
No, I don't.
These cops are
what's
trash.
Devontae Shipman.
All right, so there's another infraction. In the state of Florida, you have to have an ID card on you identifying who you are. I can detain you up to 7 hours until I can figure out who you are.
He's making
not
up shit.
Not if I've done anything illegal, officer. No, sir. You,
you did do something illegal. You crossed the crosswalk.
Yeah, that's not crossed
against,
the crosswalk.
Against a red hand. I was sitting there, right there.
So he didn't even jaywalk. Just to be clear, he just crossed when the light said don't walk. He was in the goddamn crosswalk. I'm not even watching the rest of it. I'm triggered as fuck.
For real. That's absurd. And like, when I was going to say, when I hear and see these things, I always think, how many fucking black people has this cop and other cops done this to that didn't get the fucking benefit of a video and social media virability that enabled them to fucking
look,
have
this
some
is
immunization?
A, so what? He has $65. He put $100 and something. He put another $65 on this young man who clearly was walking to wherever he was walking. So what happens when he can't pay those fines?
He goes to jail.
He goes
he gets
to
a
fucking
warrant.
Jail. He gets a warrant put out for his arrest.
For $165.
Literally, oh, I'm so mad
it's,
right now.
It's so triggering. This is like, honestly, this goes back to literally like vagrancy laws and imprisoning black men and using them as enslaved labor.
I'm
it's
just
so,
so
obscene. It's so obscene.
And like the thing that pisses me off is thinking about all the white people that walk around like there's no problem. Nothing's wrong. If you would just follow the law. Bitch, I know all of you do more actual illegal things in the course of 24 fucking hours.
Yeah.
Than these two children did. It's disgusting.
Let's go to TVs and movies.
Gosh. Anyways, The Black Florette is on. I've been watching it just to like make sure that she has some ratings. It's really irritating me. They finally got rid of that fucking racist dude that was on there.
Yo, a drunk too. I mean,
and
like,
a drunk.
Every like, I'm not trying to like cast aspersions, but like they showed that guy drinking constantly.
No, he was literally. I think constantly. He had like chew. I'm not trying to. Whatever. The whole thing is stupid though.
Yeah, he looked like Ed Grimley. Really? Like the Martin Short fucking like Ed Grimley character. I'm glad he's gone. And then he tried to fucking submarine that black dude. And like he kind of did because dude went back and kept talking to him to the woman's, you know, discontent.
Mm-hmm.
He got so under dude's skin that he had to go back. And I can't blame him. Fucking guy was a piece of shit under my skin too.
Trash. We also been watching Jennifer Lopez's new dance show,
World of Dance,
which we love. Oh my gosh. If you guys like dance shows, this is the best one I've ever seen.
Fiction and Lay Twins are giving me
life.
It has
all of the best dancers. It's so, so good. I don't even know what to say about it. These B-boys did this Michael Jackson routine.
Oh my God.
It
was dope.
Ridiculous.
The Super Crew? That was so
amazing.
Good.
Amazing. I mean,
so
honestly,
good.
So good. Anyway, so I.
World of Dance, highly recommend.
Highly recommend. What I do not recommend is this bullshit ass movie that my husband forced me and second husband Dr. Mismuthers out to go see last night with him. One movie called Baby Driver. It's crap. Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. This movie's trash. I literally fell asleep in it.
I honestly fell asleep.
None of it
well.
Makes sense.
Listen though, honestly, I want to know what movie people were watching. I feel like I got Rickrolled. Like that Rotten Tomatoes, like millions of people, like,
here's
you can
thing,
tell people
though,
it's good.
And
it's
I said this
good.
To you last night. You are trying to build this huge, giant conspiracy when in reality, you have shitty taste in movies. It has nothing to do with.
No, 98% of the world has shitty taste
true,
in this movie.
True. I'm just
Baby
telling
Driver
you.
Baby Driver was horrible.
How many movies have you forced me to watch from Sky Captain of Tomorrow all the way to Baby Driver that I have told you beforehand, like, that movie looks like shit. And you're like, no, it's going to be awesome for some random reason that you've got in your head is going to be awesome, whether it's the graphics are amazing or you read on Rotten Tomatoes that it was good.
Listen, I'm just saying, everyone on Twitter said the same thing, like, what? I can't believe it's I've heard nothing but that Rotten Tomatoes score. Everyone says it's so good. I haven't heard anything bad about it. Well, I thought it was boring as fuck. And I'm not going to be like all spoiling shit, but like, y'all know it's about a movie that's about a driver and Baby Driver. Can y'all tell me why there's no driving after the first 20 minutes of the movie? Like, Leslie, am I wrong here? Am I missing something?
The movie's stupid.
It's just dumb.
Huge plot holes.
I didn't like it. On to much better things. Did I say cunt punches?
Cunt punches.
I said cunt punches, didn't I? Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. If y'all aren't watching GLOW on Netflix,
listen,
get your life together.
Get your whole life. I'm going to download a bunch of them for us to watch too.
It's so enjoyable.
Oh my God. The show is so funny.
What's the actor
funny.
That plays the producer director guy?
Mark Maron.
Mark Maron.
The comedian.
Fucking A. He kills me.
So
dude.
Funny. And also Allison Brie is the star of it. She's hilarious. The whole
Him
thing,
and her
all
kill
the characters.
Me.
Oh my God.
Allison and Mark's.
Yeah. It's basically about the start of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. Yeah. I don't know how fictionalized it is or isn't, but it's set, you know, in the 80s and everything that comes along with that. It's completely inappropriate and totally hilarious.
It's so inappropriate. Yeah. He says to Allison, do people think you're attractive? Because I look at your face and I don't know.
Yeah,
I look at one moment, it's like, yeah, you're hot. Fucker. Yeah, fucker.
Next one? Not so much.
Not so much.
Hilarious.
He's so mean.
Also, just a quick addendum, which is that Sense 8, Netflix has announced, is being given a 2-hour season finale. So they are going to have
That's
a
good.
Chance to wrap up things for us and for the viewers of the show. We actually haven't finished the last season. I didn't want to watch them because once I knew they were the last ones, I was like, I'm going to hold off and wait. But now I don't feel. I'll watch them now.
Yeah. It was a show that I feel like should have just been the one season.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I've liked the second season. So the only thing I didn't like was that bullshit.
Changing.
We Are the World Christmas thing. That was the only thing I didn't like about it. But
so who are we podcast standing for this week?
Let's see. Who should we? I'm a podcast stand for Fambros because yesterday me and DJ Ben Amin got into what I thought was a pretty simple conversation with Sana Baldwin on Twitter about the new Spider-Man Homecoming movie. Sana Baldwin was positing that, you know, we, quote unquote, black nerds out here were, getting happy to get table scraps from Massa's table. I'm using his quotes, not, this is him talking, Sana Baldwin, not me. In the form of quote unquote diversity in the Spider-Man movie that's really just, black people as villains. So Ben and I were like, well, actually, there's a bunch of other people of color in the movie. The main character's best friend is a Latinx person. The love interest is a black woman. Even one of the characters from the comic book that they moved over to the
Isn't
show.
Isn't Idris Elba in it?
No, Idris Elba's not in it. Oh. I don't know what you're talking about.
This is the new Spider-Man?
Yes. Right. I don't know what you're talking about.
I haven't seen anything about it.
But yet you're interjecting. You think people are in it?
I don't know. I guess here's my other thing, though. Why would somebody argue about who's in the movie? That's a pretty known fact.
That's what our point was. I was like, oh, just so you know, because it's clear that they didn't see the movie if that's what they think. I was like, no, you know, Zendaya's in it as a love interest. They've got one of the characters is in the comic books, a blonde white woman, and they cast it as a woman of color. The best friend, as I said, is a Latinx kid.
Like, IMDb's like, a thing. Like, why would you argue
Hannibal
anything?
Burris is in it as one of the coaches at the school. Like, there's a lot of people of color in this movie and
that
not in a, and not in a like, oh, now we're diverse, but just like, dude, we cast cool people and now they're in this movie. It's for sure the most diverse cast that Marvel has had. So to me, it's kind of like, I don't.
It's a strange hill to die on.
And it wasn't even a hill to die on. It was just like, hey, this is information. And he was like, fuck you guys. Y'all are sicking at the master's teat. You're all this white supremacy is affecting your judgment. Like, okay, dude, slow your roll. Then he blocked us both and then continued to talk about us after the fact. But, you know, he'd been trash, so whatever.
Anywho.
Fuck a Sana Baldwin. Sana Hotep is more like it. Anyways.
I'm thinking of Afro Kai's bio that says, I'm just one misstep away from Ashy Hotep Twitter.
Yeah, pretty much.
Shout out to Afro Kai for maintaining it.
Yes, Afro Kai, staying on the right side of that
straight.
Little diagram.
Staying straight.
All right.
I don't want nobody.
Woo!
Fucking with me
in these streets. Sing, children.
I don't want nobody fucking with me in these streets.
Hey.
I don't want nobody fucking with me in these streets.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Ha ha ha.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Ha ha ha.
Ain't nobody got time
for that shit. Well, what?
Shit.
I never noticed the the baby in the background. Are y'all finished?
That's
y'all
me. Done? I threw that in there.
Oh!
y'all finished or y'all done?
Oh, I didn't notice that. Oh, that's funny, babe. That's good.
Good night, everybody.
High five.